since. It's been a long, a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Has been the story of black folks, because ever since 401 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted and dreamed of being is you kept your knee on our neck. We were smarter than the underfunded schools you put us in, but you had your knee on our neck. We could run corporations and not hustle in the street, but you had your knee on our neck. We had creative skills. We could do whatever anybody else could do, but we couldn't get your knee off our neck. What happened to Floyd happens every day in this country, in education, in health services, and in every area of American life. It's time for us to stand up in George's name and say, get your knee off our necks. National Action Network and I have been involved in a lot of these fights we started around criminal justice. I did speeches and eulogies at most of the funerals that we've had in this space in the last couple of decades, and led the marches and did what we had to do. I look at Martin III, we went to jail together fighting these fights, like his daddy went to jail before. But I'm more hopeful today than ever. Why? Well, let me go back. Reverend Jackson always taught me, stay on your text. Go back to my text, Ecclesiastes. There is a time and a season. And when I looked this time and saw marches where, in some cases, young whites outnumbered the blacks marching, I know that it's a different time and a different season. When I looked and saw people in Germany marching for George Floyd, it's a different time and a different season. When they went in front of the parliament in London, England, and said it's a different time and a different season, I come to tell you, America, this is the time of dealing with accountability in the criminal justice system.
That was the Reverend Al Sharpton, remembering George Floyd. Welcome to The Conversation. My name's Graham Nystrom. This is our live call-in show on KMUN. But we've got some interviews that I'm going to play that we recorded at the demonstration yesterday in downtown Astoria. And as we get things started, I want to let you know as well that there are two more peaceful demonstrations happening today and tomorrow. Today, in Warrenton, at 225 South Main, at the fire station, you can join the Warrenton High School's Multicultural Club and their peaceful demonstration from 11 to 5. And tomorrow, again at 750 Commercial Street in downtown Astoria, from 12 to 5, you're encouraged to bring posters, masks, water, and snacks. And we did hear from some attendees yesterday that some who brought their small children ended up regretting that decision due to the counter-protesters who showed up and were aggressive and intimidating and infringing on the peaceful demonstration. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. Reverend Al Sharpton also said, "I want us to not sit here and act like we had a funeral on the schedule. George Floyd should not be among the deceased. He did not die of common health conditions. He died of a common American criminal justice malfunction. He died because there has not been the corrective behavior that has taught this country that if you commit a crime, it does not matter whether you wear blue jeans or a blue uniform, you must pay for the crime that you commit." A quote from Edith Jennings in Massachusetts: "My son, who's 28 years old, and now a new father of his own son, said, 'It must be nice to wake up in the morning and feel safe, to not be afraid to go out and do what you have to do for the day, to hang out with your friends, not be afraid of the police. I wonder what that's like.' When I heard that, I was almost in tears." There's been a lot of communication in our industry about the protests, about the current situation, and I wanted to share an email that I received that I think applies just as well to our station as it does to the station that this originated from in Northern California. "Acknowledge the outrage you feel, and let us channel that outrage into action. KMUN stands in solidarity with the protesters who have found their voice and their courage to speak truth to power and demand racial justice. Protesters with a fundamental right to assemble in protest of the inhumane acts of police and the murders of black people. People are hurting. We can't go back in time and change the systematic, horrible wrongs that brought us to this moment. The murder of George Floyd, as well as Oscar Grant, Michael Brown, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Amadou Diallo, Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, Philando Castile, and countless others. However, we can use the power of public media to go forward into the future and ignite a flame of openness to ideas that explore these issues, bravery to take on racism, discrimination, and violence, and a pledge to hold each other accountable for adhering to this mission. Words matter, but I think actions matter more. As a media organization, we have a responsibility to take steps to actively encourage positive change and not just participate, but lead community discussion. We have an important role to play in examining, revealing, and dismantling racism. We need to provoke discussion and seek solutions. Public media has always given those without a voice the opportunity to tell their story. Let's turn up that megaphone and set an example for our community. The community is searching for ways to learn, understand, and connect, and perhaps together, we can find our way through these challenging times." Our program director, Emily Geddes, and I attended the protests yesterday, and we spoke with some of the brave souls who were there speaking, and I think it's profound that the person that organized these three protests is a young woman that is in high school named Alejandra. And so I have immense respect for Alejandra. She's involved with the Multicultural Club at Warrenton High School. and we're going to listen to a little bit of what she has to say.
Okay, so can you tell us your first name and what town you're from?
My name is Alejandra, and I'm from Warrenton. I'm here to protest the injustice that is in the system. I want equality, no matter the skin color. I want everyone to be treated equal and to be prosecuted equally, too. I tried to make this as early as possible to have people involved in this. And I wanted not only to be just Astoria, I wanted to be Astoria and Warrenton because we can get the word out a lot better. Sharing towns. Black Lives Matter and justice for George Floyd and everyone that has been a victim of racially profiling or anything like that. Started a multicultural club to show more diversity and to spread the diversity around the school because we don't really have much minority there. That the new generation, Gen Z, is fighting. We are out here fighting for equality and fighting for justice.
My family members that are half black, of course, myself and my boys are Polynesian. They are in a darker skin. They're darker than I am or my daughter. So it just makes me fear for their life as they get older that they may get pulled over or prejudged for the color of their skin. And the video of George Floyd just moved me. I mean, I can't stay silent anymore. Silence is violence now. And I just need to be out here and supporting Black Lives Matter.
And are you an Astorian? Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Astoria, but I grew up across the river.
What brings you here today?
Well, the world's a little crazy right now, and it's been crazy for a long time, and this police brutality has to stop. Black Lives Matter. It's just, normally I'm more thoughtful and eloquent, but I don't know what else to say besides this matters. It's time for a change.
What's the first thing that has to change?
The police. There has to be more accountability in policing. They need to lose the riot gear. They don't need riot gear. We do not need to militarize our police. I don't even know if we really need police. We need more community policing, community action, taking care of each other.
Do you know where that accountability can come from? Like, what's the first step, or what's the action that needs to? Is it a government thing, or is it a police union thing, or is it a voting thing?
I think it has to come from all sides. It has to come from community. It has to come from the federal. It has to come from state. I think there needs to be more. If we are going to keep police officers, we need to have more community involvement. More citizen ride-alongs. I think it should be a crime where it's no longer allowed to be evidence. If they turn off their body cams, they should all be using body cams. They should all be retrained to have less forceful interactions. You know, like if they're spraying everyone with rubber bullets right now in the protest, why can't they use those normally? And preferably not straight at them, because that's not how they're supposed to be used. I think there needs to be work with the police unions. I think there needs to be more open transparency for records on police misconduct charges. And I think that's kind of scratching the surface, honestly. I wish there was one easy solution, but a lot of work needs to be done collaboratively.
Yeah. Well, the more people that come out and get together and talk together, I guess, it's a start.
It's a start, but revolution is not a one-time event, as Audre Lorde has said, so we need to keep showing up. We need to keep finding ways to be organized, to know what our community needs. I mean, we're a pretty white community. We don't face the kind of level of discrimination that a big city would have, but then again, we do have a lot of racists, you know, so we have these people out here. We need to make sure the people are protected, but I'm thankful for the police we have, but they still need to be accountable.
So you said that everything's been said, what more can you say, but what are some of those things, just for the sake of saying them again?
Black Lives Matter. This isn't right. That this is violence perpetrated on the people by the state, that this level of violence is worse than the burning of buildings. That we the people have power and we need to exercise it, we need to use it. That the methods police have been using when they riot against us has been wrong and violent.
Well, thank you, Beth.
Yeah, thank you for letting me
Thanks
talk.
Thanks for turning up. Yeah, if you think of anything else you want to say, come back by, okay?
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
It's been a long day. My brain's kind of like melting away.
You did great.
Oh, thank you.
That was Beth. Before Beth, we heard a woman named Queen, and then that segment started off with Alejandra, who is the leader at the Multicultural Club at Warrenton High School, who has organized another couple of demonstrations. Yesterday, there was one in downtown Astoria. Today, there's one at the Warrenton Firehouse, 225 South Main from 11 to 5, and tomorrow again at 750 Commercial Street, 12 to 5 in Astoria. Here's Lindsay.
I'm really angry. I'm really sad that this is happening and that there's so much hate here still. That Astoria is not just a bubble secluded from everything. There's hate here, like I've seen it, like people flipping us off and people coming and antagonizing us. And we're here because people keep dying. People keep dying unlawfully. Black people keep dying unlawfully by police brutality and by other people. And we need to like stop it from happening. And all lives matter, but only until Black Lives Matter first. Only until they're like on the same level as us. And I'm really sad and angry, but I kind of like, I don't know. Like, I hope that, like, we can make a change and a difference, but it's just really sad. Just really sad. I don't know what else to say.
Well said.
I'm really angry.
Lindsay is sad and angry, and I think a lot of us share that sentiment. Let's hear from a couple of more of Alejandra's classmates at Warrenton High School. Here's Autumn.
Can you tell us your first name and what town you're from?
I'm Autumn, and I'm from Warrenton, Oregon. I've lived here basically my whole life.
And why are you out here today?
Because, well, a lot of stuff's happened, and I think the fact that there is a lot of inequality with everything. I think that all lives matter, but right now, because Black people have been like suppressed for a really long time, that this is a really important movement. And so I wanted to come and support it. Well, obviously racism needs to stop and Black people need to start being treated more equally. Everyone needs to be treated equally. Like, that's, I think that's the main goal here. Like, just everyone matters. We need to treat everyone with like they have importance.
Thank you, Autumn. Here is another couple of students from Warrenton High School, Tori and Libby.
I'm Tori, and I'm from Warrenton.
I'm Libby, and I'm also from Warrenton.
What brought you out here today?
Equality and
yeah.
peace.
I would say equality. Pretty much my mom's darker skinned, and so being mixed, you've heard a lot of things, and it's just hard to, like...
Deal with it.
So coming here, it's mostly for my family. It's for people who are also mixed. It's for people who have been oppressed. It's just bigger than what anyone thinks, you know.
Maybe.
I've been reading a lot of things, unlearning pretty much, you know, that's built into you. You aren't born being racist. It's built into you. And I think that unlearning that and just learning how to love would be probably the first step. Not really. I mean, if something's brought up, it's mostly if something really big happens, then yeah, but it's not something we like to talk about, I would say.
It depends on the student.
Yeah, it depends on the student. Like if someone says something, it's talked about, but it's nothing like, hey, we should, you know, it's not really brought up, I would say, normally.
And so none of your classes have ever had like a book about racism, or, you know, none of your classes have lesson plans that talk about it?
We've learned about it in younger ages, actually, from classrooms. They'll read us a book about racism, and then they'll have us do a paper on it and what we think about it and how we can change it. But as we get older, it's not very talked about because it becomes more of a sensitive subject to most people, because you start to deal with it as you get older. Kids start to learn, and especially when you're growing up in a public school, it can get bad. Yeah. It's hard to deal with.
A lot of people have the mindset of, like, they don't listen to the other side. They're very, oh, well, you know, we've been doing this for years, we should keep doing it. And I don't think that's right. I think there needs to be change. So I would say mindset and change. Yeah, I think there's a big gap, especially if it gets political even, it's like you just need to shut up about it. I would say I think they're afraid to talk about it because of what might happen if they do. You know, parents, people who have been here for a really long time, I think they're just afraid of the outcome.
Especially the teachers.
Yeah, so I think it's a very hush-hush subject. There's a big gap, yeah.
So you think teachers are afraid to talk about it?
Yeah, and I think especially students are too, but yeah. If a teacher brings it up, if it's really bad, I think it might be dealt with, but mm-hmm. There's been things where teachers haven't said anything. They've just talked to the parent and, like, nothing happens.
Maybe pull the student to the side and ask them
yeah.
if they're okay.
A lot of the time, I mean, it's not, like, common, like, every day, but it's pretty, like, you wouldn't want to see it that much in a school. Yeah.
But then when it does happen, you feel like there's not enough follow through to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, unless
it just repeats itself.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, some people get expelled, but it's not, like, they don't have any remorse for it, so there's no change. So yeah.
And even if they do get expelled, they just go on to the next school doing the same thing. They
yeah.
don't really get a lesson about it. They just get pushed out of the way, so they don't have to deal with the consequences.
Tori and Libby from Warrenton High School. We've got one more short interview with a woman named Liz. Here's Liz.
Yeah, I showed up and I saw someone with a megaphone that I also saw here last week. I actually saw him violently try to hit another protester in the head. This guy was here antagonizing. He was sort of pretending to be nice and engaging us in conversation and then taking what we said and twisting it and saying it through the megaphone. And then pretty obviously just trying to taunt us, and another truckload of people rolled up who were doing the same. They've been showing up at other protests here on the coast. Not respecting personal boundaries, kind of like schoolyard bullies with megaphones, basically.
But then you said that there was something that happened that got them to leave eventually. Was there like something in particular?
Yeah. So one of our fellow protesters, we were like, well, we don't have megaphones. First we laid on the ground and just yelled out, I can't breathe. And then ignored them for a while, and then a fellow protester went and got it, a couple of metal pans, and every time they turned the megaphone on, we just clanged them, and so we did some harsh metallic noise back, and they disappeared in like 5 minutes. I don't know if that's why, but it sure felt like it, and it felt real good to have them leave our little corner.
In your mind, what do you hope to come out of this? What do you think is the next best?
Being here in person, especially after COVID, it's just really good to, like, even if we're socially distancing to the best degree that we can, just see and connect with other people around this cause. It's different than being at home and doing stuff on the internet, which is also important, but being here and being a body on a main street where other people can see that we're here is really important, especially on the coast and in Oregon, where it's a really white state. And out here, there are some really radical divides in the politics. So here, I feel like it's really important to show up and be seen.
Thank you, Liz. I want to draw your attention to the fact that every single one of those interviews was with a woman. And I want to say how proud I am of those women for showing up and speaking into a microphone and making their voice heard. And so my follow-up question is, where were the men? And so my challenge to the men is, please show up. Please be there in person, like Liz said. Today, 225 South Main, 11 to 5. You've got an hour to get there. and be one of the ones to kick this off. Tomorrow, noon to 5, 750 Commercial Street. I want everyone to show up, but that's just me. On Tuesday, June 9, George Floyd will be laid to rest at a private ceremony in Houston, his hometown. And at noon on that day, public and community stations around the country are going to be playing the Sam Cooke song that I opened the show with today. A change is going to come. The Reverend Al Sharpton has called for a new march on Washington in August, and I'd like to go. Maybe you do too. Maybe I'll see you there. I think it's time. I think it's time for a change, and I think a change is going to come. What do you think? We've got about 4 minutes left in the hour, and so I'm ready to take your calls. And if everything is working properly, we do have a caller on the line. Hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being patient. Please go ahead with your comment or question.
Of course, it's going to be hard for me to talk. You sandbagged me at the opening with the Sam Cooke, because the Sam Cooke is one of my favorite songs, and it's soothing. And then that sudden crash of overlay, what happened. My first question to you is, who did that mix? Was it you, or is this something that was produced elsewhere?
Well, the Sam Cooke song is just the Sam Cooke song, but then I threaded in some of the footage from the protest yesterday in downtown Astoria. So that was your friends and neighbors chanting.
Yes, and thank you, because that, as much as I try not to get overly emotional about this stuff, it hurts. And yeah, I wanted to let you know that there is another piece that's missing in this, I think, and I heard it on NPR yesterday. There was an interview with a woman who teaches at Yale, and she was talking about the need to teach whites when we have conversations about different perspectives, it's always, what is it like to be black? What is it like to be a person of color? And she said, we need to talk about what it's like to be white, because most of us don't have the distance.
Is there I think there's a beep happening. Is that on your phone?
Pardon me?
Are you touching a button on your phone? It's beeping.
No, it just does that.
Okay. So imagining what it's like to be white.
I'm sorry, because I'm across the river, so we have very poor connectivity here.
Okay, it sounds better now.
Okay, thanks. She was saying that it's necessary to talk about what it's like to be white. And at very nearly the end of the conversation, the people talked, you know, two women, and they both, and one of them, the interviewer from NPR, said, and here we are, two women of color, talking about this. And the import of that was tremendous. We, as white people, need to understand what it's like to be other. But we also need, basically, to understand how much we get away with. And we need to own that. We need to accept that even if we don't go around hitting or yelling or being nasty, we're still part of the problem. And we're part of the problem because we accept getting away with and being special all our lives. And we never have to pay the price that others do. I've never been able to get beyond the story that a Harvard professor told of the day that he was getting walking home and very angry at having been treated disrespectfully, and was wrapped in his own thoughts, and he saw a bunch of kids coming toward him, and he crossed the street and he started walking again, then he had to stop and realize what he'd just done. He is a person of color. The kids coming toward him were a group of teenage boys who were black, and he, without even thinking about it, crossed the street to get away from them. He said, "My God, I'm afraid of my own children." And we've done that. We have created a world.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The May Labor Report is taking a lot of economists by surprise. The economy picked up 2.5 million jobs in May when the general expectation was that numbers were going to go the other way. The U.S. is still in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic, though. More businesses have been reopening in the past month under public safety restrictions, and more people are heading back to work. After months of backlash over the pace of his response to the emergency in recent months and his militarized stance to civil unrest since last week, today President Trump is seizing on this moment. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
President Trump reveled in the fact that the numbers came in better than the grim predictions of economists.
Today is probably, if you think of it, the greatest comeback in American history, but it's not going to stop here.
Trump tied the economic news into protests of police brutality, saying the improving economy is, quote, the greatest thing that could happen for race relations.